Hello and welcome to Real Geeks. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
Hey, hey.
And this week, we were gifted to, like, a real treat, a film that I expected to be pretty decent and turned out to be transcendent. Oh my god, this is Everything Everywhere All at Once.
This is Wang.
Mrs. Wang, are you with us?
I am paying attention.
Now, you may only see a pile of receipts, but I see a story. I can see where this story is going.
It does not look good.
Version of I'm from another universe. I'm here because we need your help.
Very busy today. No time to help you.
It's both the title and about the only way to really describe this movie.
Yeah, no, I would like to just get it out of the way right now so that I don't end up accidentally saying it. The only review ultimately I have of this film, the score I give it or what have you, is that this film is and deserves Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's beautiful. It's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
It's philosophy via kung fu flicks from the Russo brothers. Well, produced by the Russo brothers.
Produced by the Russos, which when I saw that in the credits, I was like, wait, really?
And you can feel it.
And
there is a style that is very, like, Marvel-influenced in this.
Yeah.
But far, far greater than anything they've really achieved. Like, it's like they took everything that they learned from doing the Marvel films and, like, maybe some of the themes that they wanted to bring to it. It really feels like the Russos brought everything that they had learned attempting to do this in the MCU and with Kevin Feige to the Daniels, Kwan, and Scheinert, and they've done in 2 hours what took philosophers and quantum physicists decades to explain and slowly cipher through pop culture.
And yet, oddly, I had kind of figured out when I was 8. It sounds probably arrogant, but I swear to you that this is 100% true, that there was a time when I was 8 years old and I had this thought of, like, what if our imaginations are not actually us creating, but our minds, like, looking into other universes?
I mean, I think that's an actual theory. Like, so this film, without being preachy in, like, a Matrix sense, is jam-fucking-packed with theory.
Yeah.
And that's kind of one of the theories that people have considered and discussed and, like, done papers about and such, that just kind of gets used for the makeup of the rules of this. It's not done in an overly complicated way in which it's hemmed and hawed and discussed and all that. It just, here it is, here's how to manipulate it, go. It's kind of like, it takes the presumptions that you understand how to adapt to these things quickly from a video game and moves at that pace. A lot happens in this film in a very small geographic space.
And such an utterly random space as well. Like, 90% of this movie is in an IRS office, like, of all places.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't even realize that, oh, they're still just in this IRS. They have not left this IRS office. I should get to the breakdown before I just actually start going off on this film, because it is so energetic and just you want to talk about. No, my mistake. You don't want to talk about this film. You want to gush about this film. there's a very real danger that this episode could descend into about an hour of so cool. Michelle Yeoh plays Evelyn Wang, a woman who owns a laundromat and more or less has done nothing with her life. She has a bad relationship with her gay daughter. She has a collapsing marriage with her husband. And her father clearly has an antagonistic relationship that is developed throughout the film. And suddenly, in the middle of an IRS audit, you know, the worst moment of your life compounded onto a bunch of worst moments of her life, she's contacted by a version of her husband from another universe to tell her that an evil supervillain from the multiverse is coming to kill her. And also, you can download superpowers and random knowledge from other versions of yourself in what is at first a very confusing and then incredibly hilarious mechanic. I can't talk enough about how brilliantly creative this film is. We will go into spoilers, of course, and from there, but holy fucking shit.
It's now also with the plot, there was an entry on the IMDb trivia section that I want to slide in, like, right with the plot. To keep plot details under wraps before the trailer was released, the official IMDb synopsis read, "A woman tries to do her taxes." And that was it.
I mean, that kind of is it. There's a way to cut this film without removing, like, the first 20 and the last 10 minutes of it. Not changing anything in that half an hour of solid film. And it would just be about woman does her taxes, finally comes to terms with her daughter, stands up to her father. Simple. Yeah. That's ultimately what happens in this film. And then in the middle of it is a cosmic bagel with everything on it that takes up it. I just want to say, this is the longest and shortest 2 hours of your life. It's the longest because it's super dense. Super dense. It is the shortest because it doesn't feel like it.
Oh, no, it doesn't. But I think at the same time, it also has to be noted that this movie is, as much as we both absolutely loved it, I would also acknowledge that it is not for everyone. Like, when you look at something like, Tenet, where I had no trouble following the time travel elements because I've been a Doctor Who fan for years, so I've had a certain amount of preparation before going into the movie. And with this, where I've had a basic understanding of multiverse theory, as I said, for years, I had a certain amount of preparation going into this movie. And the simple fact is, no matter what Disney and Marvel tell you, this is a true multiverse story right here.
Yeah, this is unfettered, creative, personal. We're in the middle of multiverse stories. There's a ton of multiverse stories. From Marvel, we just got Spider-Man, which is, of course, based on another Spider-Man multiverse, which is based on a Spider-Man multiverse comic book. Which was itself inspired by the cartoon in the 90s doing the multiverse, which was inspired by... Anyway, I'm gonna try to pull back from that. That is a rabbit's hole that turns into a wasp's nest. we're in the middle of multiverse films from Marvel. We had Spider-Man. We're going into Multiverse of Madness, Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. The audience is primed right now for this kind of film. And I feel like if No Way Home was like multiverse 101 for a lot of the audience, this is definitely like, okay, welcome to 201. We're going to ratchet this shit up. This is not for beginners anymore. You need to learn ton of theory. You need to understand this,
This is
on a big level.
This is 100% the master class where you are getting ready to write your thesis.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Spider-Man No Way Home is like, oh, isn't the mechanics of this fun? And we get to see some of our friends. And, oh, aren't those circumstances interesting? And this one's like, okay, but let's consider the philosophy of it. That ultimately means that nihilism wins. It's like, yeah. Ah, shit. Oh, no, Sartre was right. Boo. And then learning to cope with that.
Yeah, no, it's like nihilism wins. Yes, but.
Yes, but, exactly. Yes, and.
And also, we mentioned how the movie stars Michelle Yeoh, who, in an ironic bit of recasting, this was originally written for Jackie Chan.
You can see it immediately.
Oh, yeah, no, like, they gender swapped and gave her the lead, and just with the simple fact that she's been Chan's sidekick in so many movies, it's kind of poetic.
Yeah.
It
also makes sense when you consider the character that they gave for Waymond Wang. First of all,
who
Waymond.
Who I wanted to get to.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
What, like that's, one, really, that's a great name.
Also, oh, it's a wonderful name, but also the actor. I'm guessing on part of this pronunciation, so bear with me, but the actor, Ke Huy Quan, who you don't know, who you probably don't know the name, but it's my turn to do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to say six words.
Yeah.
I'm going to say six words, and you will immediately know exactly who it is. No time for love, Dr. Jones.
Yeah, I can't believe they brought him back. Like, that's so wonderful. I'm so happy that he has kept up acting and steals the show in a film that is just amazing. When you are in a movie where James Hong is doing an over-the-top, ridiculous, kind of cartoony performance, and Jamie Lee Curtis has hot dog finger lesbian romance scenes, you are doing something right. You are doing something that is, it's beyond acting. It's immortalizing.
Just the simple fact that this man has been doing, I think, like, fight choreography, stunt work, really immersed himself into the martial arts to the point that he has not been in front of a camera in literal decades. comes back for this movie, and this is the performance he pulls out.
Yeah, it's an incredible performance. It's beautiful. It's one that at first you assume is just kind of like, oh, this guy is such a weenie, and weenie is a superpower. Only way to put it. He becomes the heart of the entire film, and it's really magical watching him perform. It's really amazing watching him shift back and forth. You know what it reminded me of? And I really presume that this is the point with the glasses. Superman Clark Kent, where, like, all he's doing as an actor is shifting his attitude and his demeanor, and he's becoming an entirely different person, not only on screen, and literally the character's becoming a different person, but the way Evelyn reacts to him, she looks at him as a hero, as a protector, someone who can be there to help her, and it's amazing just seeing that shift and, like, using that trope in a completely separate, unrelated way. I thought that was really well done, and it takes a really committed actor to understand, like, it's not just about doing a different voice. There's so many details in his performance that change just like that, and you have to be able to tell that change, because otherwise you won't be able to keep up with what the hell is happening.
Yeah, and Also, to add to that, the dialogue between him and Michelle Yeoh, especially early on after we meet Alpha Waymond, where there are points where the two actors are essentially having two different conversations simultaneously, and it's written in such a way that it is so seamless that you almost can't tell. And then add to that how he's, again, switching back and forth.
Yeah, it's...
like, that is one hell of a juggling act.
I can't wait to rewatch this film.
Oh, no, me neither.
I can't wait to see what I missed. It's so rich. It's so dense. Even just, like... we're talking about just, like, character beats and, like, the philosophy that is presented and maybe some action scenes. But when it comes down to, like, individual shots that occur in this, it must have taken forever. There are one shot in this. Like, they completely change settings. They completely change costume. They completely change, essentially, their character and their choreography for just, like, a half-second shot. And then they ram 30 of these together. And that's just... about 15 seconds of a fight at the end that goes for about 10 minutes. And they're cutting into the amount of extra footage that they have for this and the details and like the other worlds that you get just a tiny sneak peek at. Oh my God. So much went into this.
I half expect to find out that they could build another movie just out of extra footage.
Easily. I wouldn't be surprised. It's the kind of film that I don't want to say it was found in editing. Editing does a lot of work in this, but found in editing suggests that there's like a writing and directing issue. I just want to say that the editor of this was so fucking on the ball.
Oh yeah, no, I have seen TikToks where it's just transitions of like instantly transitioning from one outfit to another, say, that were just absolutely seamless. And I feel like those artists would be looking at this movie and going, I need to know how they did that.
Yeah. The addition of a big budget and all of the graphics artists that you can imagine applied to the directorial approach of TikTok. It's what, wait a second, what was the name of that? Quickie? Was that Quickie? Quibi.
Remember yeah,
Quibi? Yeah. It's everything that Quibi promised. Remember Quibi? No, you don't. Don't lie to me.
I only remember Quibi because I remember it failing.
I remember it being announced. Nothing. Failure. There was something about a golden arm and a sex doll. That's about it. Playing as our villain, as our antagonist, because you don't want to really put her in the role of villain. It's more of a perspective thing. Is Stephanie Hsu as Joy Wang / Jobu Tupaki, the time-traveling, super-powered, aware of everything and in every present moment, troubled daughter. And she gives a fantastic, like, equally fantastic performance. I'm just going to keep saying that. Everyone gives a fantastic performance. The fight choreographer and teams in this give a fantastic performance. The guys who get awards jammed up their asses give fantastic performances while getting them and while having them jammed up their asses. Everyone gives a fantastic performance. Now, so I gotta stop saying it, but I can't.
Oh no, you two don't have to know. And side note with those awards, just the fact that this is the movie that made Chekhov's butt plug a thing that exists.
Mm-hmm. If you're ever interested,
it is wonderful.
If you're ever interested in seeing props from Man of Steel enter an orifice, you know which prop. You know which orifice. And then fight. But yeah, Stephanie Hsu gives an incredible performance, first as like a down-to-earth, realistic character, and then as this multiverse-spanning juggernaut of a supervillain who can be everyone that they are capable of ever being, someone who could end time with a bagel.
Yeah.
It's one, I love her outfits. Every single one of them are incredible. Two, she's fantastic evil. Like, she chews the scenery, but isn't like hammy about it. You can tell when she's in her evil mode because, remember in the Mirror Universe how Kira was like an evil commandant?
Okay. Yeah. No, the term you wanted was the Intendant.
Thank you. The Intendant. Such a bad name for such a great character. Very much Kira Nerys Intendant vibes from this, and I want more. I want to eat it up. I want all of this. All of it.
Oh, no, and again, also a side note with Jobu is that there is at one point during a fight scene, she is wielding two giant dildos as a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one and only cinematic dick joke I have ever laughed at.
Yeah, it was an incredible moment. It's a fantastic fight scene, and I was just sitting there thinking, you know, I've come a long way. Saints Row humor. You and I.
Yeah.
You're beating someone in a multi-million-dollar Hollywood film with multiple dildos. If that's wrong, I don't want to be right. I never want to be right.
No, and there's another point where she's rapidly cycling through different weapons. And at one point, there's a split second where she's wielding an Oscar. Now with everything that's happened, you almost want kind of a sequel where she brings in Will Smith for like 30 seconds.
Just slap you back into another reality. Speaking of, I wouldn't want to call it a cameo. It's definitely like a feature player. Jamie Lee Curtis in this.
Oh my God.
Oh my God, Jamie Lee Curtis. No one has ever questioned Jamie Lee Curtis's capabilities. Even when she was a scream queen,
no.
She was still the best scream queen. The fact that she has this brilliant sense of humor about herself is just wonderful. I never expected going into this film, I never expected waking up today, having to see and enjoy watching Michelle Yeoh and Jamie Lee Curtis make out with hot dog fingers that cream in your mouth. And yet, and then saying, that is the greatest thing I have ever seen. You need to watch this. It's horrifying.
I am so happy for Jamie Lee Curtis because, I mean, number one, this was a role where I knew beforehand that she was in the movie and I was still going, Wait, is that?
Yeah, she kind of vanished into her character. It was like, I, you know, she's there. You're like, okay, obviously that's her. But also it's like, there's something about, I don't know, maybe it was the character. Maybe it was just the over the top costume. But she vanishes into it until.
Oh, yeah.
Until she decides to become a homicidal maniac and. It was the moment when she staples the circle to her forehead that I was like, there she is. Yes, there she is.
Yeah. Ooh. And the second thing I was going to say is just another thing that comes out on screen is she just seems to be having so much fun. Like, she has been in Hollywood so long that if anyone deserves a role where they can just go all out and have a good time, it is goddamn Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, she earned this. And it's, yes, this film looked like it was a ton of fun to work on. A lot of work. Like, this looked like a ton of work. It's like the choreography is incredible. The fight scenes are imaginative and ridiculous.
I spent three quarters of the movie utterly convinced that those fight scenes were choreographed on Mad Libs pads.
Yes, especially when Jobu Tabaki was showing off like her full Super Saiyan skills and just like going from like fight sequence to fight sequence in midair. It was brilliant. It was kinetic. I would hate to see the absolute mess of sticky notes that would have made up this sequence. It's just like, here's the next 3 seconds on screen, and it's 20 fucking sticky notes, and they're all individual, and they all require their own costumes and locations.
Oh my god.
The mechanics of this, they could have been super lazy. Like, I don't want to say that this film that I'm about to talk about was lazy. It's more that it came at a different time. It was inventive for when it was out, and more was not demanded of action films, especially like genre sci-fi action films that more or less they're dumping into markets. This is a spiritual or conceptual sequel, not intentionally, but very much like you could watch it as a sequel to Jet Li's The One.
Yeah, no, I've honestly been looking for an opening to make that comment, because I have heard in several other reviews for this movie where at some point somebody will make the joke that this is the greatest sequel to The One ever conceived.
Yeah, this is like the fulfillment of the promise of what that film could have been. And once again, I'm saying I saw The One in theaters. I love that film. That was a great, fun, smart sci-fi action film that did as much heavy lifting as was expected at the time. It had a multiverse. That's it. We're not going into the mechanics of it. We're not going to talk about the philosophy of it. We're not going to talk about what that means for identity. And bless this film for going into the further depths of it. But I'm just, I'm so happy that we were able to get something along the lines of Jet Li's The One, with again a top-notch martial artist, Michelle Yao, but with some humor and some context and depth. And I'm doing it again. It's so beautiful.
And also a certain surprisingly meta quality to it, because at one point she gains her martial arts skills from an Evelyn in a parallel universe where she rejected Waymond, stayed in Asia, trained in the martial arts, and ended up becoming a major Hollywood movie star. And as I was watching it, I was in the theater thinking, I want this world to be where, like, this is actually Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that they pulled back at that, but I know that they just wanted to get it nice and tight.
No. They actually did not pull back.
Really?
Some of that footage is actually footage of Michelle Yao at like premieres and so forth.
Yeah, and you could tell that they used that for, you know, it was logical, it was a good idea to use. She, of course, has access to all that stuff. I just assume that the character is not called Michelle Yao. You know, it's still Evelyn.
I don't think she's actually addressed by name. So if you wanted to make that your headcanon, it is a really easy thing to do.
Isn't her name given on screen at some point? Because the film fake ends, and then we realize that we've been watching the film within a film, and it says like Evelyn Wong on it, I believe, which makes no sense, because wasn't Wong her husband's? Anyway.
Well, you know what the other thing I would say to that is, That is her stage name, and I stand by that.
Yep, we'll go with that. Why not? We'll go with it. If that's the thing that I am suddenly nitpicking, I just need you to understand how the rest of this film is pure kinetic bliss. It is, it delves into theories and like explanations and perspectives on the universe that are really quite beautiful. This film has a lot of heart, like a ton of heart.
And like, there are points where it goes, oh, we need to slow down for a second. Okay, we're going to turn our leads into piñatas because fuck you.
Yes, there's an entire sequence in this when we are at like our climatic height of one character like descending and another having their full like exposition explosion, essentially. Like, we're at the height of the film and it dead stops to two rocks talking to each other in a wasteland, and you're not hearing the rocks, you're hearing the breeze. You are reading text in the sky, and they just have a nice conversation about existence and meaning. And they're rocks. And then one of them has googly eyes. And then they chase each other off a cliff. And it's really meaningful.
And even just for good measure, at one point during the conversation, the way the dialogue is written, you'd swear that somebody went, okay, how many times can we put fuck on screen?
Yes. Yes. It's a great character moment where, you watch a mother and daughter rock just say fuck for the sake of saying fuck on screen. And honestly, if you printed out any of the screens from that scene, you would have like an inspiration poster.
you totally would.
And it's such a smart film, and I shouldn't expect anything else from the Dans, and neither should you, considering their previous most well-known work, of course, is Swiss Army Man, in which a stranded person has to make the best out of the corpse of Daniel Radcliffe, including befriending and then utilizing in various ways, including riding him through the waves. It's a magical film, if for nothing else than Daniel Radcliffe plays one of the most engaging corpses on film you have ever seen in your life. That man can do a good dead. You're great at being dead, kid. Stick to that.
Yeah, I myself have actually never seen Swiss Army Man.
Oh, you gotta watch it. I absolutely suggest.
Oh, you know, I was just gonna say, I had never gotten interested when it came out, because the way it was being presented at the time, it sounded like it was basically built on fart jokes.
Oh yeah, and yeah. The trailer, the marketing company had no idea what to do with it because it's a bizarre, absurdist, dark comedy that. The Daniels and I guess Daniel Radcliffe. So the Daniels all came together and decide to see how best can we ruin the presumptions people have about this actor. And the answer is have him be a rotting corpse.
With my having said earlier how this movie, Everything Everywhere All at Once, has the one and only dick joke in cinema history I have ever laughed at.
Mm.
The way that Swiss Army Man was marketed, it was obviously never going to appeal to me. By the time I left this movie, my opinion had done a complete 180, and I need to see Swiss Army Man in the worst way.
Yeah, absolutely. I very much suggest anyone listening who has not seen Swiss Army Man, go and watch Swiss Army Man. And if you have seen Swiss Army Man, rewatch Swiss Army Man. It's so good. Daniel Radcliffe's filmography, aside from the Potterverse, is brilliant, eclectic, creative, and very brave. And I don't mean like, oh, he made decisions. I mean, like, damn, he went for it.
Oh, I mean, even just Guns Akimbo.
Oh, Guns Akimbo. What a concept. but yeah, like, everyone involved with this went hard. Everyone went hard. James Hong went hard in a role that clearly was written for him.
As much as the internet truly loves James Hong, this movie gives you the only thing that is possibly better than James Hong, which is James Hong in a mech suit.
Yep, a mech suit made out of what appears to be like old toasters or computers from the 80s or some fucking shit.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's a thing of beauty. I want there to be action figures from this film. And they would never run out of options, considering all of the very, very amazing costumes and varied characters that they come up with for this film. Someone's imagination was in overdrive. Speaking of someone's imagination in overdrive, like, there's a Ratatouille, an extended Ratatouille reference and joke in this. Rakanui, I believe,
I think it's Rakakui.
Rakakui, which is like, do you mean Ratatouille? It's like, you assume, okay, yeah, she's just gotten the name wrong. No, we are talking about a completely different universe in which she works with a chef who has a raccoon under his chef's hat that is controlling him. And the raccoon is voiced by Randy Newman.
Oh, that's what the Randy Newman cameo was.
And it's just... What the shit? There's a moment when the chef, who is controlled by the raccoon voiced by Randy Newman, gets on the shoulders of Michelle Yao and controls her through her hair like the raccoon controls him, and they chase after the raccoon voiced by Randy Newman that is in an animal control truck that is getting away. And it's a deeply emotional moment.
It's a deeply emotional moment, but I'm also going to say the two words, chicken fights, like when you get on top of somebody's shoulders and start to fight. that I'm just going to say that. I'm going to drop that right here in relation to that scene, and I'm not going to say anything else.
Oh my god, there's so much.
There's so much that no matter how much we spoil, no matter how much detail we describe, there is so much here that you have to goddamn see.
Like, I feel like this film is a vindication of obvious things. It's a vindication of Michelle Yao as the star that she should have always been. It's very much a, listen, assholes, this is what we could have been doing this whole time, but you just didn't get it. It's a vindication of the Daniels, who were considered a little too weird. As much as Swiss Army Man is brilliant, it is also very strange and definitely not something that you would say comes from the minds of people who could make an action comedy that is potentially like a critical and box office darling. This is currently having issues at theaters because COVID's back again and everything's going back to hell. And anything that doesn't have literally the good Marvel intro on it will not do well in theaters. But it's doing incredible with critics. Everyone who's seen this can at least say, like, oh, it was a fantastic film, even if I didn't necessarily personally connect with it. Like, and I feel like it vindicates the Russos, who, you know, what an odd thing to say. Oh, it vindicates the Russos, the guys behind the most successful financial films of all time. But people say that with the assumption that, oh, without, you know, Marvel and without the characters and the history to draw from, maybe they're not that good. And it's like, no, they're definitely that good. This is proof that everyone involved in this is as good as everyone has said that they should be. You're the one not giving them a chance.
yeah, no, like, this is basically what happens when everyone on a production is allowed to just, no restraint, flat out, go.
Yeah, like, there's so much love and attention and detail that goes into this. I hope that these people, I don't necessarily want a sequel to this project itself, but I hope everyone involved in this goes and makes something together again.
Yeah, I just got reminded of something when I saw Jenny Slate's role. Before we get started on the absolute glory that is this movie, two possible warnings that I think we should put out right off the bat, which is, number one, if you are at all photosensitive, there are parts of this movie where you're going to have difficulty.
Yeah, there's a lot of flash and lights during later parts. A lot.
Oh, yeah. And if you have issues with dogs appearing to be harmed on screen, there's a couple brilliantly hilarious points, but they may also be a problem with you. And a third thing that I'm thinking of that is pretty much for one specific person, but if vomiting is an issue for you, I'm gonna put out right now that there is a scene where, yeah, you're gonna have some problems.
This movie is so good, it will make you puke. Yeah, Jenny Slate flings around a pocket puppy at the end of a leech like Gogo Yubari in Kill Bill, and it is a moment where I actually cackle screamed. I scream cackled. It was beautiful.
Oh, yeah, no. Oh, no, me too, because her character, I feel like the best way to describe her is if you took Paris Hilton and the definition of a Karen, put them together, and then threw them into a kung fu movie.
Yeah. Yeah, she plays just an obnoxious kind of self-centered character who is glitzy and just vapid and vacant, and it becomes this incredible moment when they bring all of the background characters forward. Like, no one in this is just an extra. Everyone is something, and everyone gets their moment.
Yeah.
And you've forgotten about her by the time they bring her back. And then she starts whipping that puppy around. And then switching personalities between the Kung Fu master, who is an agent of the evil supervillain, and the concerned owner who just kicked her puppy into a fridge. Brilliant.
Oh, it's, yeah, it's another one. It's so wonderful. And just the simple way that you have to be paying attention, because even the smallest, tiniest little detail is going to have meaning at some point in the movie. Something as simple as the way that karaoke machine is circled on one of Evelyn's receipts. That same circle is sprinkled throughout the movie.
Yeah, the circles are repeated. Character lines are repeated and often from, like, different perspectives. Relationships are repeated on different wavelengths. Like, everything in this is about, like, IDIC. Infinite. God damn it. Infinite diversity
in infinite combinations.
Yeah, the great Gene Roddenberry motto. At writ large, kinetic, imbued with the awe-inspiring power of cocaine, and let loose.
And with all the weird things that characters have to do to gain whatever skill they need in a particular moment, I'm kind of surprised the cocaine doesn't actually make an appearance in this movie.
I mean, the creativity that they came up with to not end up repeating just a bizarre function. And the first time it happened, you're like, that's super weird. I assume that there's a reason for it, but I'm not seeing it. And when they explain it and you realize the full potential of where this can go, like, you can just start doing some weird shit. It doesn't matter. You're in a tight pickle. Do some weird shit, and it leads to some of the best character interactions and just visuals ever. Like when the bad guys are all prepping for battle, instead of like looking hard, they all start like licking the wall or punching themselves in the face or eating coffee grounds or something. Like, it's incredible. It's brilliant. And you know, speaking of callbacks, like every detail in this matters. Every tiny little thing. That's a funniest shaped award. Why is it shaped like that? Oh, you'll find out.
Well,
you'll find out. And every fight scene ratchets up in a way that, like, they're very predictable in that they're kind of following a ratcheting up sequence that repeats and repeats and repeats. But every time it happens, you don't see it coming. And when it happens with a man who, with no pants on, flies butt first over a cubicle wall, flipping to drive something into his nether regions, and then that is like his introduction as like a stage villain. Like he is the boss of this stage, and that was his introduction. I don't think I've ever seen a better fight that can't really be shown to anyone under the age of 16. Maybe 13 if they're worldly. What an incredibly horrible fight. I love it.
it is even censored. And still.
And it has to be. There are suggestions of movements there. That man must have been very uncomfortable. That was commitment to the cause.
Oh, if there's some way that I could give that man an award.
I feel like that dude was definitely like, I've seen him before. I want to say I think he's a stunt worker, and I just want to see him on the corridor crew at some point. And okay, guy, we're gonna talk about it. We're gonna talk about the time you fought with a dildo up your ass and your pants down. That time that you finally got to fight Michelle Yao. It's the pinnacle of your career, and you can't be shown in photographs without blurring out half your body.
And like, even just with Michelle Yeoh's part of the choreography, where she has to basically be able to go from Kung Fu Master to completely unskilled slap fighting.
Yeah, right at the pinnacle. Just slap fight. Forth. Amazing. A completely just. A slap fight that takes all the wind out of it at the exact moment that you needed that breath. Brilliant use of comedic timing and relief. This film is so damn smart. So damn smart.
It's so smart and so heartfelt. And there's this monologue that Waymond has toward the end of the movie. I need the text of that monologue so badly, because it is one of the most beautiful things that I have heard in recent memory.
Yeah. No, it that's the thing. Ultimately, it has an incredibly beautiful message about making the most of whatever you have, so that's something. Nihilism Alicia, if you let it. So have something. And it can be anything. It doesn't matter what that is. So as that's your thing.
Yeah, like, there's that, there's self-acceptance, the importance of family, And there is so much that I think, particularly nowadays, people truly need to hear. But at the same time, none of it is preachy.
Yeah. And, like, that's definitely something that hit me about it, is it's super, like, well, frankly, it's super superhero-y. It's very, like, it's the same ideas that you end up having in a Marvel film, where it's just, like, you know, community, love, support, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But when you strip away the IP, and you strip away, like, the kind of the noise and all that, the ideas are just all the more powerful. And it's, when people complain about superhero films taking up all the space, I don't think necessarily they're talking about giving space to something like this. But I'd be okay with this taking that space. Yeah. This is, I'm okay with this taking that space entirely. Yep. Brilliant. Love it. I want more people to see it, and I only worry that they won't, because it seems to be a relatively small release.
I would certainly hope that it picks up to some degree, but knowing that for understandable economic reasons, a lot of theaters are trying to fill as many of their screens as they can with things like the Batman,
it's once again, we are still in the middle of very specific economic situations, and there's no real guarantee that the theater culture will survive it without becoming something, say, more boutique or event oriented. And while this is a fantastic film, it's not like an event. It's not something you can take your kids to.
No, I would not do that. If nothing else, even ignoring all of the elements in this movie that children should not be seeing, you need to be able to sit and focus and absorb what is happening on the screen. So you need to be able to see it without the distraction of your children.
Yeah. Yeah. You need a committed 2 hours with nothing distracting you. Otherwise you're going to miss little details that make this thing ever so rich and tasty and delicious. And I'm on the verge of spending another hour just crying and going, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. Mike, do you have any final thoughts on this?
Last thing on my end is, quite simply, I need to see this again so badly. I almost want to skip recording for next week just so that I will have more time to go and give this movie more of my time.
Just want to, like, we'll release a second episode that completely ignores this episode. And from now on, this is a podcast that weekly releases an episode freshly reviewing this movie.
Oh, you know, like, we're just bringing in, like, reviews from different universes.
that was a beautiful film. And as I said before, I already gave my review, because I'm just going to gush about it. There's nothing else aside from, like, holy shit, that was quite possibly one of the best action films I've ever seen. It was emotionally beautiful. It was heartfelt, soulful, smart, funny, clever, brave. And if you are not watching it for any reason other than I hate all of those things, you really need to watch this movie.
I just feel sorry for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you need this.
You need to see this in this universe. You need to see this in every other universe you have available. We need to put this on a roll of film and send it to the Nazi universe from Man in the High Castle so that they can rally around it and overthrow Hitler. This is a great film.
Oh, it's... It, oh, yeah, no, The only rating for this that I can honestly think of is that this is a Rakakui manipulated chef's kiss of sheer beauty.
Perfection. Thank you so much for listening to Real Geeks. I have been Crash and Burn. He has been Mike Montgomery. And this has been Everything Everywhere All at Once. If you liked it, please like, share, and subscribe. If you have any comments, give us a shout at realgeekshfx@gmail.com.
Questions, comments, input, insults, advice. We just want things from you that we can discuss.
Anything.
Possibly make fun of you for... but discuss.
I will also accept decent recipes. No mushrooms, no seafood. Join us next week when we will be talking about Sonic 2, which... it's certainly not as good as this movie.
No. I haven't even seen it yet, and I am honestly going to say not even close. And the thing that is consoling me at the moment is because the week after that, the unbearable weight of massive talent comes out.
Yes, it's going to be a good
month. And we're going from Sonic 2 to that Nick Cage movie.
It's going to be a good month.
I cannot wait for that Nick Cage movie. The hell with Sonic, but...
Subscribe and listen for that! Good night.
See ya.